Speedway Report is produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. NASCAR National Series head north to Wisconsin and Michigan. Formula One ends their summer break with their return to Spa. And one of the great short track races in America, the Oxford 250, crowned a champion last night. All this and more. Welcome to Speedway Report. For Monday, August 29th, 2016, from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds, and thank you for joining us tonight. From the North Myrtle Beach ZRN Studios, producer Jeff Gilder is with us. Jeff, I realized as summer vacation comes to a close, cleaning the house with kids around is a little like brushing your teeth with Oreos. How are you, Daddy Jay?
Yeah, that's good. I'm pretty good, man. Good. Getting reacclimated here after taking a few days off. But, yeah, man. Brushing your teeth with Oreos. Yeah.
Yeah. Clean the house with kids. Well, let me go into summer vacation here shortly. I saw your cool photos and videos on Facebook. You were, gosh, southerner up in upstate New York there at Plattsburgh?
Plattsburgh, Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
All up and down through there over to Burlington, Vermont, Lake Placid, Saranac Lake, Tupper Lake, all over the place. Got to do some sightseeing, some hiking, a little climbing. Good stuff, man. Had a good time. Had about 1 hour of business on Friday morning to take care of, and just decided to make it a weekend. You know, so it was good.
Wise move. So you can write this trip off, basically, is what you're telling me.
Basically.
I've been to all those places. I've been up there as a little kid. My mom has family up in Vermont, so we went there and we've gone sightseeing before. And since then, I've traveled the lakes and the highways and byways of New York with the dirt cars and the modified. So, yeah, I've been all around that area.
Man, it's beautiful country.
Gorgeous.
Holy mackerel, man. I just... you go up over a rise and the view of the lake and the mountains and stuff you see is just incredible. It would love to have been there a couple weeks later to see the foliage, but didn't work out that way. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When I worked on the race teams, we raced in Watkins Glen, always in August, which is a beautiful time. Now you're going to get a big shock if you visit in January and expect the same.
No, I 30 below. I have no interest in being anywhere close to 30 below. It's not going to happen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have no interest in that. I'll visit it in the pretty months.
June, July, and August, upstate New York, northern Vermont. Gorgeous. Oh, gorgeous. I'm not hardy enough to handle the winters up there anymore. No,
yeah. I have no interest in learning how to handle them.
Mm-hmm. I've got another story for you to make you feel old. Old. So if you'll be older, I'll be old.
Okay.
Our show began. We went on the air. I remember it. June of 2010. I started working with you on the air, and we started doing this little show. We got June of 2010.
Holy cow!
Colleen was in preschool, and in a few months, she started kindergarten. That fall, like August, like late August, she started kindergarten. Today, she was her first day of middle school.
Wow.
I'll let this sink in for a moment. I know I'll
next
mix.
Thing, next thing you're going to tell me is she's graduating high school.
Shut up. Yeah. Well, you know, I blinked once and she went from kindergarten to middle school, so I'll blink again and yeah.
We'll be talking about the guys that are coming to pick her up. Take her on dates.
All right, there's no call for that. No call for that.
Oh, my goodness, Patrick.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, Have you seen my new NRA registration card? That,
no, I haven't.
Yeah. Come on over. I'll open up the safe and show you my firearms, just in case anybody else was listening. And had a bad idea.
Yeah. You might need to put a sign in the yard, you know.
Yeah, just go away. Yeah. That's my sign. Yeah. Well, how's Eli? Has he borrowed the car yet? You know, speaking of kids growing up.
No, man, it's so funny though. He's growing up too. His front teeth are coming out now, so that's
nice.
They're just kind of barely hanging on, but they'll be out in a day or two.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good to hear he's doing well. The kids are doing well. They're growing up healthy and nice. And you as a grandfather and me as Colleen's dad, all we can do is say a prayer and do our best every day. I guess that's what our jobs are.
Exactly. That's a good job to have.
Jefferson, I appreciate you bringing Speedway Report to life tonight. Thank you very much. And I want to thank all of you out there in our audience for tuning in tonight. If you are on racersreunion.com, say hello to our chat room folks, Danny, Jack, Larry, and Jerry, along with Jeff and myself, are in the stock car site room. And fellas, getting ready for the Racing and Rocking show at 8 o'clock Eastern time in the drag room. Barb is already there, Bill Pratt, Jack is doing double duty, Thomas Warren, Woody Delbridge, all in there. Hey guys, good to see all of you tonight, and if you'd like to bench race with them, head on over to racersreunion.com. And likely our buddy Leo is listening down in Brazil. Hey, Leo. Appreciate you tuning in every week. Coming up tonight on Speedway Report, a little bit later, will be your phone calls. We'll open up the phone lines for you. If you'd like to chat about some racing, 843-272-1900. A reminder to like our Facebook page, Speedway Report with Patrick Reynolds. And you can follow me on Twitter at SpeedwayPat. And before we open up those phone lines, we're going to welcome our special guest in the segment before that, NASCAR Modified driver, the natural, Timmy Solomito. Tim is coming off a nice runner-up finish at the Whelen Tours race in Riverhead, Long Island, Saturday night. And the Mod Squad will be heading to Oswego this weekend in upstate New York, where Jeff just was for the Steel Palace for the NASCAR Modified 150. Timmy Solomito, the natural, is coming up shortly. So you can write this number down now. We'll open up the phone lines later. 843-272-1900. We'll let you know when we're ready to talk, and I look forward to visiting with you tonight. Right now, we'll tee up the Speedway Report Victory Lane lap, give you all the results of this late summer weekend. The Sprint Cup cars were in Michigan yesterday. Kyle Larson won his first career cup race and dedicated the victory to his friend Brian Clausen. Larson, as he put it, parked it in winner's circle. Some young guns near the front of this one as well, with Chase Elliott finishing second. Veteran Brad Keselowski was third. Ryan Blaney was fourth. Then the vet Kevin Harvick was fifth. Xfinity Tour was at the road course in Road America, and nice guy Michael McDowell took the win in a Richard Childress Racing Chevy, which was a popular win in the garage and social media. RCR teammate Brendan Gaughan was second, ahead of Brennan Poole, Daniel Suarez, and Ryan Reed. The trucks also christened the Irish Hills on the two-mile oval. Brett Moffitt has now led one lap in his Truck Series career, and he made it count. He led the final lap Saturday to the checkered flag, passing Timothy Peters and William Byron. Moffitt, your winner. Peters in second. Daniel Hemric bumped up to third. Byron finished fourth, and Cameron Haley fifth. We just talked about the NASCAR Whelen Modified Tour in Riverhead, Long Island, where the natives swept the top four spots. Justin Bonsignor won the 200-lap event over tonight's guest, Tim Solomito. His brother Sean Solomito was third, and Tom Rogers Jr. rounded out the Long Island contingent. Chase Dowling was fifth, not a Long Island native, so first in class, as we may put it. NASCAR's K&N Pro Series West Tour. Rosen was in Roseburg, Oregon, and Ryan Partridge won the Napa Auto Parts 150 after he was running third when first and second place Todd Gilliland and Chris Eggleston spun together in the second half of the race. Grayson Roz was second, Riley Herbst third, Noah Gragson fourth, and Julia Landauer was fifth. Gilliland did rebound, moved his way up to sixth. The Indy cars were in Fort Worth, Texas on Saturday night. The Firestone 600 began June 12th and was postponed by rain to Saturday night, and the resumption was well worth the wait. This race was a dandy. The margin of victory? 0.008 seconds. Graham Rahal over James Hinchcliffe. The fifth closest finish in IndyCar Series history, and the closest finish in Texas Motor Speedway history. Hinch led the most laps before Rahal passed him in Turn 3 on the final circuit. Absolutely breathtaking race. Tony Kanaan was third, Simon Pagenaud fourth, and Elio Castroneves fifth. Nice rebound for Elio as he bounced his car off of the wall late in the race. Still came back for the top five. In Formula One yesterday morning, I was up early, had the coffee going, and the Belgian Grand Prix, Nico Rosberg leapt from the pole and went on to control and win at Spa. All heck broke loose behind him, as the NASCAR fans may compare this race to Martinsville or Bristol, but in the end, Daniel Ricciardo was second, Lewis Hamilton came from last on the grid for third, then Force India teammates Nico Hülkenberg and Sergio Perez were fourth and fifth. IMSA Tour was just up the road from me at Virginia International Raceway yesterday afternoon. Jan Magnussen and Antonio Garcia steered their Corvette to the Michigan GT Challenge win. On the dirt tracks, the Lucas Oil Late Models raced Friday night in Junction City, Kentucky. Scott Blomquist led all 50 laps for his first win of the weekend. Tim McCready was second over Dennis Erb Jr., Greg Johnson, and Don O'Neill. Out in Saturday, they went to Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Blomquist takes checkered flag number two for the sweep, beating Earl Pearson Jr., Brandon Shepard, Greg Satterley, and Erb with another top five. Interesting stat, Blomquist led every lap of both features. The World of Outlaw Sprints raced last Friday in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and Donnie Schatz, well, he performed a sweep of his own, not to let Blomquist get away in the headlines. Donnie Schatz, he set fast time, won his heat, won the dash, and then won the A-Main. Second through fifth were Brad Sweet, Mark Dobmeier, Logan Schuchart, and Joey Saldana. Last night, the tour was still up in North Dakota, where Schatz won again, extending his streak of being the only World of Outlaw winner since 2012 at the track. Jason Johnson, Darren Pittman, Schuchart, and David Gravel were next. The USAC Sprints raced last week for several nights at Kokomo, Indiana for the annual SmackDown. They tried to get going on Wednesday. That was rained out. On Thursday, Kevin Thomas Jr. won the feature. On Friday, CJ Leary won his first career sprint race. And Kevin Thomas Jr. stayed hot with his $10,000 final night win on Saturday. In the short tracks in Grandview, Pennsylvania, Dwayne Howard won the small block modified feature. Ron Klein won the late model race, and Ryan Lillick won the Sportsman Main. The Cars Tour was local to me in Concord, North Carolina. Josh Berry won the late model stock car 100, and Raphael Lessard won the super late model 100. The tri-track modifieds raced last Thursday evening in Waterford, Connecticut. Steve Massey won the $10,000 first place prize. And the ground jewel of short track racing, one of the several, big, big race, big, big win at the Oxford 250 last night. Wayne Helliwell won a thriller over Travis Benjamin. Helliwell cashes a check for $25,000. DJ Shaw was third, Ben Rowe was fourth, and Joey Pohl rounded out the top five. Right there, let's bring out the pace car, bring out the caution flag, come to the pits for some four tires and fuel. We got to slip in a few commercial breaks. And on the backside, we're going to talk to NASCAR modified driver Tim Solomito. Second place at Riverhead. Well, he's a winner here tonight. He's our guest. We'll speak to him coming right up. You are listening to Speedway Report. I am Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this.
Right.
Welcome back to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I welcome the Speedway Report. NASCAR Modified driver coming off an oh-so-close, but still fine. Second place finish Saturday night at Riverhead the Natural. Tim Solomito joins us. How are you tonight, Tim?
Good, bud. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
We appreciate your time tonight. How's your day going so far? Come off a second place finish at Riverhead. Cars, team, everything looking in good shape for Oswego this week.
Yeah, certainly. You know, after Bristol, we really didn't decide until Wednesday that we were going to Riverhead. So, right. You know, pretty good showing there that we got out there and got a good solid second place finish. The guys gave me a really good car and, you know, gave us a good points today. So that was the main thing. You know, we had to race smart and we were able to do that and come home with a second place finish and with minor damage to the car. So that's good. We're on to Oswego this week and really looking forward to getting up there. Never seen the track, but really excited to get there.
Well, I myself was happy to see the 16 car go to Riverhead and you guys compete. Can you talk a little bit to our audience that may be unfamiliar with that situation, what happened at Bristol, and then maybe the decision to go or not go? Obviously, you finally went to Riverhead. Can you summarize that as far as what the team was thinking?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I guess you could say it was a miscommunication between NASCAR and a couple teams down there at Bristol. You know, one official had told us, you know, on a repeated level that we could work on the car and fix the car, and we did, and then we were told that it was a mistake and that we would be penalized for it. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our teams, we spent a lot of money to go to Bristol, and, mm-hmm. you know, our owner was a little upset, and I can't say I blame him. So, you know, he had originally thought that maybe we were going to sit out a few races and reevaluate and think about the future for Flamingo Motorsports and race on the Whale Modified Tour, so. I'm really happy that he was able to, you know, get past it, and our team was able to rebound strong with a second place finish and have a good showing. So, you know, it just shows you how strong our team really is. And, you know, obviously they were a little upset, a little bummed, especially running for a championship, you know, to get penalized after being told that we could have worked on the car. So, you know, it was tough, and unfortunately it happened, but we can't go back and change anything now. So. We're just that's in the rear view, and we're looking forward, and hopefully we'll finish the year out real strong here and hopefully have a good finish to the point.
I like your attitude, and we'll follow the example you're setting. Let's move on from Bristol conversation and talk about happier times, Riverhead. Going back to your home track, your home roots there, tell me about the race night. Strong run, strong qualifying, strong finish for you. Tell me about Riverhead.
Yeah, we were real strong all day. I mean, we unloaded the car, and you know, we just tweaked on it to make it better all day in practice, and we finished up practice on the top of the charts, which I was really happy about. And, you know, we had a late draw for qualifying, which always helps, and we went out in time trials, and we were able to put it second. My brother actually snagged me at the end, so it was all mm-hmm. Solomito front row, which is pretty awesome to do at your home track for such a big event, you know, something I'll never forget. And my brother works really hard on his deal with the 75 car and Wayne Anderson, and I used to drive for Wayne, so, you know, really good to see those guys run strong and the amount of time and effort that my brother puts in to be able to qualify on the pole, and he finished on the podium as well with me. He finished third, so, you know, the race went really well. We had a really strong car. We got out front. We led a little bit. I let it slip up a little bit and got jumped on the restart a little bit and fell back to second, but, you know, was able to maintain and just thought about trying to save the car and you know, just didn't have enough at the end to get back by Justin. And, you know, it's just short track racing. It was tough. Mm-hmm. It was some beating and banging, but, you know, that's what happened at Riverhead. And you know, Justin did what he had to do to win. And, you know, we were really out there racing for points and trying to get ourselves back in the championship hunt. I mean, I know it's a long shot, but the shot's still there, and that's what I like about it.
I want to talk about qualifying a little bit. You were the quickest car in time trials for a good portion of the time trial session. At the end there, your brother Sean just nips you. Great run by him. He gets the pole, but you get bumped off a little bit. How does that make you feel? You happy for your brother? Are you a little bit bummed for yourself? Somewhere in between as a race car driver, how does that make you feel?
You know, my competitive side, I was a little bummed. You know, you always want to put it on the pole. But, you know, deep down inside, I know how hard Sean works and, you know, he's always worked hard on cars that I've driven and always worked hard with me in the shop, and he's taught me a lot. So, you know, deep down inside, I felt joy for him, but, you know, of course, you know, being the racer, I always want, you know, you always want to be the best. So, you know, just really happy for him that he had a strong run. You know, he's had a lot of strong runs this year, and unfortunately hasn't been able to finish them or has run into some bad luck. So I was happy for those guys that, you know, Wayne Anderson and Eastport Fees and all them, you know, really put me on the map with running the tour a full season. So, you know, to see that team have success and run strong is always always puts a little sparkle in me and makes me feel good that those guys are still running really well. So, yeah, I definitely wanted the pole, but if I could lose it to anybody, it would definitely be him.
We move forward, and late in that 200-lap race, the final restart occurred with about 9 laps to go. You mentioned that you slipped up earlier in the race, lost the lead. You're running second to Bonsignor. What are you thinking at 9 to go? This is your chance to move and go for the win, or are you more or less playing defense, how you mentioned points before in the long race to the championship? What's going through your head with 9 to go? How were you planning on playing that final sprint?
You know, obviously, I was going to try and run the 51 as hard as we possibly could. You know, you always want to win. You know, at the end of the year, you know, there's always a champion and there's always a guy that won a lot of races. So, you know, you kind of want to be both. But, you know, I knew I had to play it smart, and I knew I couldn't put myself in jeopardy to get wiped out, have a bad points night, then we'd definitely be out of the championship battle. So, you know, deep down inside, as bad as we wanted to win, you know, we kind of had to be a little bit smarter and you know, back off and. You know, we gave it all we had, but we just came up one spot short, and at the end of the night, it's never a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. And the finish of that race really reflected well on Long Island racers. Long Island has such a great history with modified racing and their names, you know, Fred Harbach, Charlie Gerzombeck, some of the great names of modified racing have come out of Long Island. The Checkered Falls Saturday night, the top four, all local guys, Bonsignor, you, your brother Sean, Tommy Rogers. Has that, to your knowledge, ever happened before where Long Island guys are always strong there but sweep the top four spots? Do you know if that's ever happened?
I don't know if that has, but I know the first race there back, I guess it was June, I think it was the top three drivers. It was me, Bonsignor, and Leah. So, you know, Long Island has always had a strong following, and, you know, we've I don't know what it is, but I guess racing at Riverhead makes some rough drivers and some sharp drivers, you know, at the same time. So Riverhead's always been a tough track, and you got to really you got to race the track, but you got to be able to race tight quarters with your competitor and not wreck the car. So you know, it was good to see the Long Island guys finish up strong and have a good showing, especially in front of the hometown crowd. You know, those are the people that supported us all these years, and you know, racing locally is what it's all about. So you know, the next stage is impossible without local racing. So always cool to get a good finish at Riverhead and see everybody that you grew up with and everybody that continues to cheer you on throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Riverhead's such a tight bull ring with a quarter-mile track, and you venture out on the Wayland Modified Tour, which, generally speaking, is larger tracks, half-mile, five-eighths, things of that nature. What does the Riverhead track teach you that you can take out onto the tour to be strong out there?
You know, the biggest thing is just how to get up on the wheel. You know, I mean, at Riverhead, you can never relax, whether you're coming up on lap traffic, you know, leading the show, or if you're running third, fifth, 13th, you know, it don't matter. You're always up on the wheel. You're always tight quarters. You're always, you know, you're always bumping, banging a little bit. So I think it teaches you car control and finesse at the same time, you know, and when you can run hard and when you actually have to save your car. You know, Riverhead's always been a tough track. You're not only just racing your competitors, like I said before, you're racing the track. You know, the track is tight. You know, there's plenty of laps that you come off the corner and you know you're getting real close to that fence, and sometimes you even scrape it. So, you know, you gotta pay attention to what you're doing at all times when you're at Riverhead, and make sure that you're not putting yourself in jeopardy of, you know, smacking the fence up off the corner. And you know, you're always, it's real line sensitive, so you gotta kind of pick and choose where you want to put your car. And, you know, it really can make you a smart driver if you, you know, can pick up on all those things and just think, and, you know, things happen so fast there, so you're always, you know, your reaction time, you know, it's just got to be really quick. So I think those are all things that contributed to, you know, going away to these bigger tracks and running, you know, pretty well. You know, all starts with starting out on a small quarter mile with real fast race cars.
With the decision to come from Bristol and eventually go to Riverhead this past week, it was a, you know, happiness for so many of the Modified Tour, Modified fans, to see you guys at Riverhead. Let's give a little call to Flamingo Motorsports. Tell me about the crew guys. Tell me about your sponsors. Give our audience a little background of the team that you drive for.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, first and foremost, we got Eric Sanderson. I mean, he's the guy, you know, lives, eats, breathes, sleeps racing. No matter what the car needs, no matter what our team needs, if it's going to make us better at the end of the day, you know, he's going to make sure that we end up with those things. So, you know, can't say enough about him and his wife. They've been great to me, accepting me in like family, and just really happy to drive for such a great team. I got Sly Saban turning the wrenches on the car, and I mean, if I complain about something, 9 times out of 10, he hits it right on the nose and makes the adjustment that we need to make that car go even better. So, you know, he's really been patient with me, really, really helped me out, and he's taught me a lot, you know, as a driver, and just how to be smarter behind the wheel. So, it's great to work with such, you know, such a knowledgeable guy and somebody that really knows the races, the racetracks as well as he does. And, you know, I've got a great group of guys that are on pit road. They get us on and off every time real good, real fast, and they make sure all the tires are tight, which is the main thing. So we got a lot of great sponsors on the car. We've got Flamingo Motorsports, R&B Enterprise, Sanderson McLeod Brushes, JRI Shocks, Bob Bruno Racing Engines, Troy Race Cars, Gale 4 Suspension, and Pro Systems Brakes, Goodrich Lines. I mean, the list goes on and on. We got Dick Ayers Racing Images, DRP Products. I mean, you know, it takes such a following and such a support system to run these races and to run at the level that we do, and none of it would be possible with all these people.
Mm-hmm. You've got 3 wins on the tour this year, the Thompson Icebreaker back in the spring, the June race at Riverhead, and one of Victory Lane at Monadnock as well. Which one of those 3 was the toughest for you to win this year?
The toughest would probably have to be Monadnock, I think. I struggled at the racetrack 2 years in a row. I drove there for Wayne Anderson, and we had a mediocre day there with him. And I ran a race last year there with Flamingo, and we kind of, you know, we were off a little bit. And, you know, I made a call to a driver up north, Les Hankley, who's won there plenty of times. And, you know, he walked me through and taught me a bunch over the phone, actually, about the racetrack. And I went out there, I applied it. The guys gave me a really good car off the trailer. And, you know, that track is, you know, very similar to Riverhead. You know, you have to have car control, you have to finesse, but you have to know where you are on the racetrack, too, at all times. We went, I think, 150-something green flag laps before the first caution. So it was tough. You know, we were coming up on lap traffic. Some of them weren't moving over or giving us a lane, really. And you know, you can't blame those guys who are trying to stay on the lead lap, obviously. But, you know, it was definitely tough to stay focused and make sure you hit your marks every lap. And, you know, just to save the car for that long. So that was probably my most difficult. The most rewarding one this year would have to be Thompson Icebreaker. I've always wanted to win at Thompson from when I was a kid, going there with my dad and my family watching races. So to finally make that right-hand turn and get up to Victory Lane there at Thompson and go to the clubhouse after and party with everybody was pretty incredible. And hopefully we get to do that again real soon, because Thompson's pretty awesome.
Right now, you're 3rd in the championship standings. By my math, you're 35 behind Doug Covey, but you're only 6 in front of Donnie Leah for another spot. What are you concerned more about, catching Covey or keeping Leah behind you?
You know, I'm trying to keep what's in the rear view, and hopefully, you know, keep looking out the front windshield and going forward. You know, no driver likes to look in the rear view, so. You know, we're worried about, you know, going forward here. If we do go backwards, it's not going to be from a lack of trying. I can tell you that. We're gonna go out. We're gonna give it 110% no matter what we're doing, and you know, let the chips fall where they may. If we do fall back, we fall back. But you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to know that we tried as hard as we could.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about Oswego Speedway and your experience there, but you mentioned earlier in the interview that you've never seen the place before. How are you prepping for that from a driver's standpoint? Is there, you know, pictures, video, anything online? How do you prep to drive Oswego this weekend?
Yeah, certainly. You know, YouTube's incredible. things that you can find on there as far as racing and tracks and whatnot. I've been watching some video from some ROC races and stuff like that. Probably make a few phone calls to a few guys up there and see if I can get any pointers and pick somebody's brain up there that runs well. But I certainly have been watching some videos and, you know, just checking out some lift points and some lines and stuff. Definitely looks like a tricky place and pretty cool to go to a track with such history. So looking forward to getting out there. I got a pretty good feeling. So, you know, hopefully we prepare a really strong car and, you know, I can be smart with it and we'll be there at the end to win it.
Mm-hmm. 5 races left, Oswego obviously this week, and then 4 after that, Seekonk, New Hampshire, Stafford, and Thompson. of those five tracks I just rattled off, where do you think is your strongest point?
You know, last year at the end of the year, we finished Stafford and Thompson off really strong with two third place finishes, and you know, at that time I had a lot less experience than I have now, so I'm hoping to get back out to Thompson and Stafford at the end of the year and finish the, you know, the same way we finished last year and have two really good strong runs. Never seen Seekonk either, so that'll be a new one for me as well. So I would have to say definitely Stafford and Thompson will be their strong points at the end of this year, but I wouldn't be so sad if Seekonk or Oswego wasn't one of our strong points either.
Good deal. You mentioned your dad and your family. How's everybody doing besides your brother there? You know, he's doing pretty well there. Obviously, we gave you a good run on Saturday. How's your dad doing?
My dad's doing great. He just had some back surgery. You know, he never stops working. He's worked so hard in his life and to get us what we wanted and you know, make our dreams come true, that worked himself to the bone. You know, he's had two back surgeries now, and he's home resting up, and he's getting better, so that's always a good thing. But he's doing well. I think if he could still race, he definitely would get behind the wheel and probably show us a thing or two, but he's having fun watching from the fence right now.
That's tough to beat experience, my friend. no matter what. Sure. Yeah. Well, my friend, we have to say goodnight right there. Congratulations on that fine finish at Riverhead. I know it was a little short of a victory that you were shooting for, but congratulations on that, and good luck at the Steel Palace this weekend at Oswego for 150 laps. I know you've never seen the place, but I got a feeling you will be just fine. Good luck at Oswego, my friend. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate you talking to us tonight.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me on, buddy. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Pleasure having you. Tim Solomito, everybody, NASCAR modified driver. Fine second place finish at Riverhead this past Saturday night, heading to the Oswego Speedway. The NASCAR modifieds return there for 150 laps Saturday night, part of their Labor Day Classic weekend. Time for another break right now. When we return, we will cover more of your Speedway Report headlines, and we will open up those phone lines for you. You are listening to Speedway Report. I am Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this.
Jack City USA and Beach Music Scene Magazine are proud to welcome Ginger Jewelry to our family. Check them out on the inside front cover of the latest edition of Beach Music Scene Magazine, or go to their website at www.gingerjewelry.net. That's Ginger, J-I-N-J-A, gingerjewelry.net. Check out this fantastic selection of handcrafted Balinese jewelry. That's Ginger Jewelry. GingerJewelry.net.
If you're looking to play some golf in the Myrtle Beach area, just call Dave at the Golf Director, 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. Just call Dave. Dave can get you on the course with the best rates on the Grand Strand. Just call Dave. If you're a little shy and you don't like talking on the phone, just chat with Dave. Go to thegolfdirector.com in the lower right-hand corner. Click chat. In a few seconds, you're going to be chatting live with Dave. Dave has some of the best golf packages offered anywhere. Just call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. 866-405-6531. Tell your friends to tweet at the golf director. Hashtag just call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF1. Just call Dave at the golf director.
Welcome back to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds. Thank you for tuning in and joining us tonight. Yes, we are just north of Charlotte, North Carolina, the home to so many professional NASCAR teams. That's where we broadcast from. We just talked to Timmy Solomito in the last segment up in Long Island, a native of New York. So many good NASCAR grassroots drivers around this country of ours. People associate Charlotte with NASCAR, kind of an equivalent. Yes, on the professional level, but there's a heck of a lot more people around this country that are just down here making a living in the sport. So many other people that are part of NASCAR around the country, not making a living at it, but contributing and being a part of NASCAR in some way, shape, or form. And Timmy the Natural there, just he's one example of so many guys that are part of the NASCAR Foundation. Just do a great job. And good luck to him this weekend, Saturday night, Oswego Speedway, 150 laps on the 5/8 mile up there. He's never been there. I have been there. I think the last time I was there, I don't know if Tim was even born yet. I want to say the late 80s, early 90s, something like that. It's been a long time since I've been to Oswego, and I'd love to get back there. But Super Modifieds are their weekly fair, so to speak, on their Saturday nights, Wingless Super Modifieds. They have a limited Super division, and then the Modifieds and some other divisions come in for special shows throughout the season. I'd love to get back up there to the Steel Palace. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a ring, jump on the line and chat about what you saw over the weekend. Maybe you're a modified fan yourself. You tuned in for Timmy and you have something on your mind, maybe about modifieds or whatever, any kind of motorsports. I'm fair game with. 843-272-1900. No, one more time, 843-272-1900. Yes, I would love to talk to you. So lots of good racing over the weekend. Let's talk about what I saw. I did not attend anywhere, so shame on me. I preach to you guys every week, go support your local track. I did not, as busy with other things. I thought about it. They were on my mind because we had some local tracks running here, but some other obligations kept me away from the track. First thing I would like to kick it off with, the Formula One race in Belgium. Which, gosh, some of our stock car crowd, I can hear your eyes rolling already over the airwaves. Oh, gosh, him and his open wheels and his road racing. Well, yeah, because this one was damn good. And I'm going to get to another damn good open wheel race a little bit later. But if you're a fan of, as so much of our audience is, a big stock car fan here on Racers Reunion Radio, I think that's our core audience demographic is the Southern stock car fan. The Belgium race God, that had to remind you a little bit of some Bristol or Martinsville back in the old days there. The first lap, I'll call them antics, going right into turn one, we went three wide, damaged a bunch of cars, and spun a few guys around, and I'll be darned, nobody was at fault in any of these guys, drivers. Let's set the stage for you a little bit more. Nico Rosberg was on the pole. He took off into turn one, vanished, won the race. Max Verstappen in a Red Bull got off to a poor start, almost got swallowed up. Well, did get swallowed up by the two Ferraris of Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel. And then Verstappen shoved that car all the way to the right at this tight hairpin in turn one. Dug right in there. Really, I'm looking at it as a place where he should not have been. Then the two Ferraris are on the outside of him to his left, and he claims they came down on him when really they were just going around the corner. Well, pinball ensued. Vettel wound up going backwards, and I think all three cars wound up with damage. And this sent a few cars spinning. And the Achilles heel for a lot of the field here was the shrapnel that was popping off these cars as they went around the entire first lap, which is what I think, gosh, in America, I know what it is in kilometers. I think in American length, it's probably 4 miles around Spa. It's big track, picturesque, one of the great tracks of road racing. But the carbon fiber, the shrapnel, the aluminum, just all got shredded, and we wound up with a lot of punctures, flat tires, nose cone changes, and really trashed some cars. So I think Carlos Sainz shredded a tire on lap two. The carcass of the tire spun around and round and round on the wheel and smacked that rear wing of his right off, lifted the nose of the car right up because the ride heights of the back of the car dropped, and he was pretty much done for the day after one completed lap as he pitted on lap two, or didn't even make it to the pits, but he wound up in the sand trap on lap two, and he was done for the day. Then there was a hard crash early on. Just a few laps later, Kevin Magnussen crashed his Renault hard, and what did that happen? Well, just like as I appealed to you with the Southern Stock Car flavor there, it caused a red flag as they had to fix the fence on the tire barrier. They had a wall up against the grassy hill that sidelines the track, and like we've seen so many times, they got a soft wall, homemade soft wall of their own style with a bunch of old tires there. He crashed into that, had a little bit of an ankle injury, so fortunately could have been a lot worse for Kevin Magnussen. He was not hurt. They took him to be checked out in the hospital, looked around, and he flew home Sunday night. Glad he was okay, but you had that type of racing all day. That type of incidents, that type of, a lot of fender rubbing, not fenders, but wheels to side pods, to nose cones, to wings, stuff like that. And gosh, if you're a fan of that bumping and grinding and trading paint and the good short track racing that NASCAR offers, the Belgium Grand Prix would be a pretty cool thing for you to watch. You missed a good one if you did not see it. And incidentally, it closes out, or I guess reopens, have you, the summer vacation that Formula One builds into their calendar. I think they had three or four straight weekends of no racing. And it is mandatory, not everybody knows this, it is mandatory that all of the teams shut down. Guys take vacation, you don't go into work on the cars. Part of the FIA regulations, it give guys in the middle of the year, Formula One, summer vacation. Yeah. What? Yeah, summer vacation. Never heard of in American racing. We're always working like dogs all summer on the teams out here. All kinds of hours, all kinds of nights, whatever you'd like to do. But yeah, summer vacation came to an end and Formula One back in action. I think they are in Italy this week. I got a story about Italy, too. I may save that for another time. We'll see. I want to hop back here in the States and talk about a little NASCAR right now. I don't know. We talked about top four in Long Island with Timmy Solomito, and he wasn't sure if that had ever happened before on a tour race like that. I am not either, but we had another big stat in NASCAR. Look at the top three national touring series, Kyle Larson in Cup, Michael McDowell in Xfinity, and Brett Moffitt in Trucks. This is the first time in history that it did make this official, that first time career winners swept those three series across a weekend. That has never happened before. We had Kyle Larson, a first-time winner in Cup, Michael McDowell, first-time Xfinity win, and Brett Moffitt, the winner in Trucks, his first career win. Pretty sporty right there, top three. We all love new winners. That was great to see. Wonderful show right there. Larson, particularly emotional victory lane. He was very close with Brian Clausen. We've dedicated some time on this show before. We've talked about him and the loss, his death the past few weeks. Graham Rahal as well, close with Brian Clausen, paid tribute to him in victory lane after he won the race in Texas. And there is a story brewing underneath all this. Brian Clausen was an organ donor. So after, well, I guess not after, but during his hospitalization, his family found this out that he was an organ donor, and they did what they needed to do with Brian's organs. And the story was that I believe Brian wound up saving the lives of five people, which is the silver lining in the darkness of his death. This has caused a big drive for everyone to become organ donors. And they changed a motto of from Brian Clausen's goal of racing 200 races this year to an organ donor drive of trying to get 200 people to sign up to be organ donors. Well, since Brian's death, and this story has come out and made the news, I think over 2,000 people have become organ donors in memory of Brian Clausen. I have actually been an organ donor since I got my driver's license back in the 1980s as a teenager. I've been an organ donor ever since. I've always been an organ donor since you were old enough to be one. And I encourage everybody out there, their organ donor drive, they were going for 200 people to be organ donors. They are above 2,000. Now their drive is to get to 5,000 people. This drive to become an organ donor has just taken off. And like I said, silver lining in the cloud of the darkness of Brian Clausen's death. We miss him. So many people love him and are sad that he's gone. But this is a wonderful thing that came out of this. So many people are becoming organ donors, and maybe they will save some lives as we go down the road. Hopping away from that, back to open wheel racing on the Super Speedway, the IndyCar race at Texas. Did you see this? You should have. Wow. This was a wow race. The type of close racing, so many people are critical of this. So many people love this. This gave you that feel from Fontana last year, where it was an absolutely thrilling, breathtaking, edge of your seat event. Two wide, three wide, cars inches apart, touching sometimes with these open wheels and these side pods, and you wound up with a fantastic finish where Graham Rahal passed James Hinchcliffe in turn three on the last lap. Mere inches at the start-finish line for a checkered flag. Outstanding racing. How they don't have bigger crowds and bigger TV ratings is beyond me. I don't know. You've got a fantastic product in IndyCar on the tracks, especially the ovals. But, you know, this type of racing, this mile and a half, these two-mile downforce tracks, it is a little scary to watch because disaster can strike at any time. But some fantastic, outstanding racing. That's edge of your seat, worth the price of a ticket, worth sitting down and budgeting the time out to watch the race on television. Incidentally, the two controversial events, Texas Saturday night, Fontana 2015, same winner. Graham Rahal, the winner of both races. Interesting there. Heck of a driver. Maybe that's his style of racing, as opposed as he comes out and becomes more of a winner in IndyCar. Want to ask about the Oxford 250, not in a critical way, but just really as an open-ended question here. Used to be on a Open Cup weekend, which often happened in July. How the Cup schedule lined up last year in 2015, that became an August date. And because they usually try to bring in at least one or two Cup stars. And this past weekend, the Cup race was in Michigan, no open weekend, and they still ran the Oxford 250 win. And I believe there was an open weekend in, the week before, actually, it was. And I was just wondering what happened there. Not to be critical of them, they know what they're doing. It's the Oxford 250, for crying out loud. I don't know what I'm doing. I was just wondering what was up with the change. and why they didn't try to get a cup guy there. You know, or at least put it back to the old July date there if you're going to not strive to bring in that big-name NASCAR guy. And as we sign off the air tonight, I want to say rest in peace to Cliff Stewart. So many of our family and audience remember him as being a car owner, remember the number 5 back in the 1980s. Used to be a Pontiac. Rusty Wallace drove for him. Morgan Shepherd drove for him. Jeff Bodine drove for him. It was the number 88 Gatorade card for a year or two. But Cliff Stewart passed away over the weekend, and our prayers and condolences go out to him and his family, for everyone at Cliff Stewart. In between our broadcasts, keep up on the world of motorsports with our website, speedwayreport.com. Vicki Miller, Paul Bloffus, Steve Zonger, and myself contribute new stories, and our podcasts are up there. So if you're looking for a show that you missed, a little bit of history, or you'd like to download and replay this one, speedwayreport.com has you covered. Just head right on over there. Jeff Gilder, production agent extraordinaire, thank you for the work tonight, my friend. I know you're shoveling against the tide there working with all the computers, but good luck to you, dude. I know you got it.
I got it. Thank you, pal.
You can hear more from him in Racers Reunion tomorrow, Tuesday night, 7 Eastern Time, on Racing Through History, right here on Racers Reunion Radio. Free Pennington with Making an Impact kicks off tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Then top of the hour, 7 p.m., is the Goat Rodeo. Big thanks to Tim Solomito for joining us tonight. Best of luck to him at Oswego this weekend. Racers Reunion will have some best of programming for the Labor Day Monday holiday event weekend. So tune in for some classic programs next Monday evening. 2 weeks from tonight, we will return live and talk to a fascinating former racer, an Indy 500 non-qualifier, whose story has turned into an inspiration and example for children who suffer from stuttering. Say what? Yeah, it's a pretty cool story. We're going to speak to Jigar Sorori and hear his story from an Indianapolis non-qualifier to an inspirational tale. I want to thank everyone on the RacersReunion.com chat rooms for tuning in, both our drag racing friends and our stock car friends. And your local tracks are still running. Like I preach, get out there. Support your local speedway this weekend. And I want to thank all of the military past and present for the freedoms we enjoy as Americans in our daily life, including the simple things like bench racing right here on a Monday night. Freedom is not free, and a veteran paid that bill for us. To all of the men and women who are defending freedom and listening to Racers Reunion Radio, take care of yourselves and come home soon. And a special salute to the teachers, school staff, firefighters, police officers, and paramedics in our own communities. They are quiet and modest heroes every single day. God bless and thank you. You have been listening to Speedway Report. From the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. Produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. All of our NHRA and drag racing friends that appreciate great music, stay tuned right here for Bill Pratt, John Buckelman, and Barb Santucci on Racing and Rocking with DragList.com. A reminder to like our Facebook page, Speedway Report with Patrick Reynolds, and follow me on Twitter at SpeedwayPat. For Jeff Gilder, I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back live in 2 weeks, September 12th, with results from Richmond, Eldora, the short tracks, and a talk with former IndyCar racer Jigar Sorori. Thank you all for listening. Good night.